Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April the 2nd, as we like to do every week. We're going to check today with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to take a look at a lot of stories from the complications of U.S.-Russia relations to the young people down in South Florida who continue to say whatever they can say, and nobody seems to challenge them. I think a lot of people are getting tired of that. I know I am. The American economy is doing fairly well. Bill had an article about that. Former director Comey on a book tour. Not sure he should be doing that at this moment. The Mueller investigation continues. There's now talk of boycotts. The latest one is on against Laura Ingraham, related a little bit to that young man down in South Florida. I think these boycotts have to stop. And I'm telling you, if this continues, I intend to contact a couple of those companies that I do business with and tell them that I don't appreciate this at all. Oklahoma, one of Bill's favorite Broadway plays, is 75 this week. Rasmussen has Mr. Trump or President Trump at 50%, and that's likely voters. That's an important poll. And the Attorney General Sessions decided not to name an independent counsel to look into the emails. I think that may be a good move. That may be a good move because I'm not really into independent councils. Let's say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, there's talk of snow in New York, and the baseball game, the Yankee home opener, may be snowed out. That's interesting, Bill.
Well, if that happens, we've had weather disasters before, obviously, in sports, but it's very rare that a baseball game is snowed out because baseball is traditionally called the summer game. Now, of course, the summer seems to be extending into late fall, and by the time they finish squeezing every last dollar out of television rights, we may have a baseball in January. You know, a playoff,
right,
and then a super playoff, and then a playoff to be assured that the last playoff was honest. I mean, and
right,
then finally we'll have the World Series, which, because of the tremendous public demand, will be extended to 30 games. You know, I mean, let's get those TV rights going.
That's right. Yeah, let's have a best of 30 series.
Yes.
We'll see who wins that. Baseball will soon be a sport from Valentine's Day to Thanksgiving. That's,
yeah, well,
that's
it,
how
it
long
may just happen.
It'll be. But this year they decided to start a little bit earlier, the last week of March, and I actually think it makes sense. But the idea, though, was to start games in some of the southern cities or the western cities, so you wouldn't have this problem. But, you know, they have to start in New York eventually, and from what I understand, they'll get the game in, but it's probably going to be very chilly for the fans at Yankee Stadium. Bill, one quick note that I wanted to say before we get started, it kind of ties into all the crazy stuff going on in the country, but who would have ever thought that President McKinley, who of course was elected in 1896 and reelected in 2000 and then assassinated in 1901, who would have thought that he would be the latest controversy? But I guess he is. There's a city in California where they want to bring him down because I guess he had something to do with Native Americans. This is getting crazy, Bill.
Well, it is getting crazy because it's a reflection of what the historians call presentism, which is judging the past by present standards. And under that logic, almost nobody gets away. You know,
right.
I mean, Lincoln, as somebody said, you could take some of Lincoln's writings and call them racist, and I'm sure that's coming, by the way. The radical left will not be satisfied until all those memorials and monuments are torn down and replaced by monuments only to their people, or to others to be designated. I mean, Washington was a slaveholder. We have the Washington Monument in the city of Washington, for which he is named. Should we take that down too? Lincoln was probably our greatest president, but after all, he had made some comments about blacks that would not be acceptable today. Do we get rid of the Lincoln Memorial? There are already calls, and there have been calls for quite some time, to get rid of the Jefferson Memorial because Jefferson was a slaveholder. And he was, but it was also 200 and some odd years ago. And I think we always acknowledge, I've visited Monticello, in Virginia, which was his home, and there is a slave tour, which you can take, which describes how slavery worked on his plantation. It's quite open. I mean, nobody denies it. And should he be held accountable for it? Well, sure, you have to mention it, but he also wrote the documents that were the basis of freedom in America, and he should be given credit for that. I mean, I think if you go through the list of groups that were present at the founding of the United States, including the writing of the Declaration of Independence and the acceptance of the Constitution, most ethnic groups in America today were probably not represented. But they accept it. They accept it as being the founding documents of the United States, not written by perfect people. And certainly the blood of the country of slavery was there. And yes, James Madison owned slaves, and he was the author of the Constitution. Now, do we tear all this up because they weren't perfect people? Now, people say, well, what about the Holocaust? You wouldn't have a memorial to Adolf Hitler. And the answer is no, but the Holocaust was, and World War II and the Nazi and Japanese aggression was much more recent. It was in the lifetime of many people. And these were things that there were no redeeming qualities of any kind. Not that there can be a redeeming quality for anyone who would launch a Holocaust or a war in the Pacific. But even in the case of the Germans, we would not build a memorial to Adolf Hitler. We would not build a memorial to Hirohito. In the Pacific, we would not build a memorial to Mussolini. But we did, after the war, forgive a number of the people who were involved in these conflicts, depending on what they had done during the war. Some were executed, some were not. And we went on and recognized those countries and built relationships with those countries again. That is not to say, once again, that we should not recognize our country has historical flaws. But my God, when you compare it to most countries in this world, we come out as gems. We've at least tried to correct those flaws.
That's right. And I think there's two things going on here, Bill, with this movement. Number one, by the way, I wanted to add something. My father used to say that a family without photos is not much of a family. And to some extent, the statues and the monuments are the photos, the family photos. And I'm sure that in every house you walk in, you see all these family photos and you say, who's that guy? Well, he's my uncle. And who's that guy? Well, he was my grandfather. And I'm sure there's somebody in those pictures. We all have them in all our families. There's somebody in those pictures that we're not exactly proud of, but he's in the picture, you know, because he's part of your family. But I think these movements show a tremendous amount of historical ignorance. Because if you're going to say, for example, that Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder or George Washington was a slaveholder, well, that's a fact, they were. But, you know, what about the people who were selling them the slaves? The white people didn't go into Africa hunting the slaves. They were generally captured by other tribes or African tribes who were benefiting. So, you know, there's no, as my dad used to say, there's no saint or perfect person in the story. I mean, there's a lot of mistakes here that were made and a lot of blame to go around. But I wanted to say something else, too. I think this movement, and much of it is coming from the left, this is, to me, a testament to how corrupt the Democrat Party is. This movement desperately needs a liberal Democrat to get up and say, enough is enough. You know, stop it. And that's what the movement lacks. There isn't a liberal Democrat who gets up and says, folks, you got to cut this out. This is stupid, going after Washington and Jefferson. And that's what it's lacking, Bill. There's no liberal Democrat with the guts to stand up and tell these people to shut up. Sorry about my long-winded explanation, but that's how
I think you're absolutely correct. And in fact, that was the purpose of the superdelegate system in the Democratic Party, because people, wiser heads, understood that part of the party's base is nuts, and that you needed to have some stability within the Democratic Party, which is why they had so many superdelegates, elected officials usually, who would go to national conventions and keep things more or less on an even keel. Now, that is also, interestingly enough, the purpose of the United States Senate. When the wise founders founded the country, they knew that popular passions could get out of control. And so they have a bicameral legislature, the House and the Senate, and the reason for the senators having six-year terms is that it frees them from the kind of immediate election that is almost always, that is facing members of the House, and allows the Senate to become a more deliberative body. You're absolutely correct on this, and what is so frightening is, where does this go next? Once they get finished with every historical figure, well, how about the statues of Franklin Roosevelt? He is the one who interned the Japanese Americans during World War II. Do we take his statues down too because he wasn't a perfect president? Maybe we should take down any monument to John F. Kennedy because he was a womanizer. And then, by the way, what happens if this starts going in reverse? And people say, well, what about Martin Luther King Jr.? He cheated on his wife, a fact which is very well known. Should we take him down also? And what happens if the right starts getting started on this? And also, perhaps the most prominent of all, what about Woodrow Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
Woodrow Wilson was a Southerner who had no problem
right.
at all with segregation. He is the one who segregated the civil service of the United States, thought Birth of a Nation was a great movie. Do we take that down? Then these individuals on the left can go on to the next stage, which is destroy cultural icons as well as political icons. What if somebody comes forward and says, well, George Gershwin wrote in the jazz idiom sometimes. Now, he appropriated somebody else's culture. Let's take his statues down. This is really something that can result ultimately in the destruction of the United States.
Well, that's it. You're tearing up the country because it's like, you know, where do you go from here? Like you say, who's next on this list? And once you start going down this road, there's going to be a lot of people that you know, you couldn't think of right now whose sins are going to be revealed. And I just think, again, I'll put it this way, with all due respect to any Democrat listening, the Democrat Party needs parental guidance. These idiots are just killing the party.
Well, you're absolutely right. Now, remember, this happened before, and in fact, this tendency in the Democratic Party began quite some time ago. It was really in the 1930s and 40s, the Democratic Party had a Marxist contingent. And in those days, that wasn't that unusual, because the Soviet Union was on our side in World War II, at least ostensibly. And because of the Depression, Marxism did gain a certain foothold, especially on immigrant groups in the United States. So we had a Samuel Dickstein in the 1930s. We had a Vito Marcantonio, who were Marxists. In 1948, they were kind of drummed out of the party because they were too extreme. And the people doing the drumming were Harry Truman and Eleanor Roosevelt working together. And in that year, 1948, many people don't realize this, the former Vice President of the United States, Henry Wallace, who was Vice President during World War II, of all times, split off from the Democratic Party and ran as a third-party leftist candidate on the Progressive ticket. To his great credit, he later left the Progressive Party because he also then began to realize how extreme they were. But this has happened. In the 1960s, the people who were drummed out in 1948 or their children came back into the party because of the Vietnam War and because of the presence of the civil rights movement and the women's movement, both of which, sadly, had a kind of left-wing tinge to them, and they did not object to these people coming back into the party. And they really did take over the party for a time. In 1972, they engineered the nomination of George McGovern, who was way outside the mainstream of American politics, and in fact lost 49 states to the unpopular Richard Nixon.
That's right.
And it was really Bill Clinton who saved the Democratic Party in the early 1990s. He saw the direction it was going and that it had no future, and tried to moderate it. There was the, what was it called? The New Democratic Forum?
Right. The The Democrat, yeah, there was, they had a name for it.
Yes,
it was,
and I've forgotten the name.
Yeah, the Democrat Party, not the party, it was, there was a name for it. I cannot think of it, but you're right. They formed this, like, party within a party to save the party, kind of.
I think it was called the Democratic National Forum, and it was
a group
of moderate Democrats, and they had a lot of sway, because there were a lot of them left. And
mm-hmm.
they basically tried to steer the party back toward the center or center-left, and
mm-hmm.
Clinton was really the first president to be elected under that banner. However, it didn't last that long. Clinton went through his presidency, we then elected Bush, and then we went to Obama, and that's when the dam began to burst. And,
right.
And the left really started to take over the party. It is in control of the Democratic National Committee. Both Tom Perez, the chairman, and especially his co-chairman or under-chairman, whatever they call it now, assistant chairman. I don't
That's
even know
right.
the title.
The number two
Keith
guy.
Keith Ellison is an extremist. They are nominating, in some cases, very, very extreme candidates for congressional and Senate seats, some of whom have a chance of winning. California has gone completely off the deep end
mm-hmm.
and is becoming really a leftist state, not a liberal state. And I don't think, frankly, that that's what Governor Jerry Brown really wants, but he has to go
mm-hmm.
along with the flow. As you know, there
right.
are very serious movements in California now to split the conservative part of the state off from the liberal part of the state.
Right.
And have two states, like Virginia and West Virginia. But this is it has gone so far in the Democratic Party that I don't know if it's recoverable.
Well, I don't know either because, I mean, I don't know how you bring some of these people back. But, you know, to me, anybody who wants to – I mean, there was a quote in the story about McKinley where somebody said, use a rope and bring down the statue. I find that interesting given the history of lynching that
yes.
they would use that they would phrase it that way. But I just think that somebody has got to stand up and just stop this. And it, frankly, I thought somebody like President Obama, President Clinton. But the problem with President Clinton is, frankly, he's kind of discredited a little bit because of his woman problem these days.
Yeah.
I don't think Democrats. So there has to be somebody in that party, somebody, a liberal, really. Joe Lieberman would have been the right one. But somebody who actually
–
yeah, who just say stop this stuff, man. Stop this garbage. You know, we can't do this. It's going to tear up the country. And I don't see any solution. But when you start taking down – you want to take down statues of McKinley, who I would argue half of the college students couldn't tell you who he was. I think you've got a real problem in the country where, you're, like my dad used to say, you know, a family without photos is not much of a family. And a country without statues and symbols is not really a country. It's something other than a country. Bill, I wanted to, before we take a break, I wanted to get your reaction to another story that came out this morning. And this is Rasmussen, the pollster, President Trump at 50%. Now, you know what the Democrats are going to say? Well, he's a Republican. Well, he may be, but he's getting a lot of these elections correct, Bill. So your thoughts on 50% Trump and Rasmussen?
Well, I
think that's either your phone or my phone.
It was my cell phone going off in the background. I just
yeah,
shut
no,
it off.
I went to check mine to make sure that it wasn't mine, but
I
we know it wasn't
I should have. I usually shut it off before the broadcast. I
sure.
forgot. We're still bothered by you know, telemarketers, even though we put our name on the list, but they still get
sure.
through somehow. It was a dramatic increase.
Talking about
Rasmussen. Yes, Rasmussen is the only tracking poll left in general use. Now, I'm sure that during the presidential election years, the others will come in as well. But
mm-hmm.
Gallup had a tracking poll recently, but they discontinued it. So Rasmussen is the other one, is the only one left. Now, some people say, well, it's a Republican poll. And historically, there may have been some truth to that, but not really anymore. It's a very carefully done poll. They were very accurate in the 2016 election. And what one of the things that makes them accurate is that they only poll likely voters, people who are likely to actually go to the polls and vote. They had the president at about 45%, 46% last week, and he made this great jump on Monday morning to 50%. Now, in truth, he has been there before. I would say about a month ago he hit 50%. I don't think he has gone higher, but we'll be watching the rest of the week to see if he gets into the 50s. Now, Rasmussen made the point that he is now 4 points ahead in the Rasmussen poll of where Barack Obama was on the exact day, on this exact day of his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Others will argue, well, it's one poll, and even though they've been accurate in the past, other polls have the president down lower. However, even the other polls are starting to creep up, and
mm-hmm.
I think his standing, the president's standing in the average of polls is now in the low 40s. Well, he's creeping up and creeping up and creeping up. I would not be surprised if even in the average of polls, he begins to rival Barack Obama, and that will shut the Democrats up.
Right. Well, one interesting thing. It should, yeah. But one interesting thing about all of those polls is that if you look at Rasmussen, because I began to follow Rasmussen going back to 2004. He's been pretty good in these polls. I mean, you can call it a Republican poll if you want to, and then they always do that whenever, you know, whenever they don't like the result, they call it a Republican poll. It's sort of like calling somebody a racist if you disagree with them. But
yes,
the truth is that Rasmussen, I mean, if you were a political campaign and you wanted somebody to tell you the truth, Rasmussen is the poll that you would pay for, because they've been true, or they've been correct in most of the elections. I mean, I remember in 2012 that Rasmussen had it as a tie on election day between President Obama and Governor Romney. And, if you look at the popular vote, it was a few points, but it was a pretty close election if you look at the way a lot of the states went. But, I mean, the fact that he's at 50%, and he's been between 45 and 50% really, Bill, for quite some time. So he's been in the high 40s. For much of the last few months, and the last few months have been very tough on President Trump. A lot of divisive issues, Bill.
That's exactly right. And however, if you turn on CNN, you will never know that any poll even has him close to 40%. I mean, if CNN
right.
discovered a poll that showed the president at 7%, they'd broadcast it. A new poll out today.
Right.
Shows the president at 7%. This poll is being conducted by a group of inmates at the Sing Sing in New York, but we have found the Sing Sing poll to be very good in the past. I mean, that's CNN.
Right.
It's really, if you switch between CNN and Fox, it's like going from one world to another. They have absolutely
that's right. No, you're exactly
income.
Right. No, they don't, and you have to begin to wonder sometimes. I mean, I know that the Fox primetime programming, particularly, Hannity and we'll talk about Laura in a minute in another context. But I mean, I know those two shows are pro-Trump. I mean, they don't disguise anything. Everybody knows it. If you tune in Hannity, that's pro-Trump. And if you tune in Laura, that's pro-Trump. Everybody knows that. But their news service, I mean, the news during the day, the report with Greg Bear at 6 that we get here at 5. Those are pretty good shows. I mean, I think those are pretty good and balanced newscasts, and those are good. And so, I think that I've never seen anything like that at MSNBC that is close to being balanced with respect to news coverage. Bill, let me take a little break. We're going to hear from my good friend Carlos Guedes. He's put together a brand new audio, and I think you're going to enjoy this a great deal.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpist. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to those links on the show information. So click on that, and it'll take you to Instagram and Twitter, where he has his full schedule. I mean, quite an impressive schedule. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I thought we would begin this segment with one of your favorite topics. If you could take a minute and talk about Oklahoma turning 75. Of course, that's the great play. Broadway play, and also Shirley Jones, who was in the movie. She turned 84 a couple of
wow.
days ago. I thought that was a great coincidence.
Well, Shirley Jones played roles in musicals, movie musicals, that were played on Broadway by other people. And it's unfortunately, that is the characteristic of the movie industry. They usually did not use the original stars. But Oklahoma is of great importance. It's of great cultural importance to the United States. It premiered on Broadway 75 years ago yesterday. And as they say, it seems like yesterday. And in my generation, people grew up on that music, the music from Oklahoma. At one time, Broadway musicals provided a great amount of the music played on radio. That's not true today, but at one time when a Broadway show opened and it was a hit, you heard the music all over the country the next day on radio programs. And Oklahoma, the music became very popular very quickly. It was the first show done by Rodgers and Hammerstein working together. Each man had a history in the theater, but they had never worked together before. It came in the middle of World War II, which was very, very significant. The country was at war. We had been fighting since December of 1941, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. We were making progress in both Europe and the Pacific, but the war was far from won, and it could have easily gone in the other direction. And Americans needed a lift. They needed something optimistic. Oklahoma began out of town, of course. It was they developed these shows out of town, and it was called Away We Go, which was not exactly a great title. And they made the fixes and they made the improvements. But when it got to New Haven, which is a major out-of-town venue for the Broadway theater, or at least it was in those days, many people felt it wasn't really going to make it. You know, it did not have chorus girls. It was not funny. It was not the typical Broadway musical. One critic said, no laughs, no legs, no chance. And it then appeared on Broadway. And by the way, it had a bad title, Away We Go. And somebody suggested, I think it was one of the actresses, why don't you just call it Oklahoma? And Joan Roberts, who played the original female lead, went to Richard Rodgers and Hammerstein and said, this idea is floating around, why don't you just call it Oklahoma? And they did, and they also added, and many people missed this, the exclamation point at the end of the name, which is part of the title. It's not just Oklahoma, it's Oklahoma with the exclamation point. It opened on Broadway, and something magical happened. With all the apprehensions, they all melted away. People saw an optimistic musical with a beautiful score that gave them hope, that presented the America they loved, which is the America people developing the Oklahoma Territory, optimistic, quintessentially American, and it became an enormous hit and influenced the American musical theater because the songs and the dances by Agnes DeMille were thoroughly integrated into the musical. In most musicals, the action just stopped for a song. And this integrated everything. The music that came out of the mouths and of the actors and the strings of the instruments of the orchestra seemed to flow perfectly well with the story. The ballet sequences advanced the story, and it was really the beginning of a new era in musical theater. And I don't know of any family that hasn't either been in a school production of Oklahoma, or know somebody who's been in a school production. My own daughter played the lead in a production of Oklahoma. It is the music we grew up in. Sadly, that music is not current in the sense that music like it is not being written today, but it is still in the repertoire, and it is still heard all the time. The composer, Richard Rodgers, was the dean of the American Musical Theater, and it is said that every minute of every day there's a Richard Rodgers song played somewhere in the world. And Rodgers and Hammerstein themselves went on to become the dominant musical team on Broadway. They wrote South Pacific, Carousel, The King and I, The Sound of Music, really the champions. And Richard Rodgers, as composer, went on to write the music for Victory at Sea, which is one of the great television series. Just an important event to remember Oklahoma and what it did for us.
Well, one thing you can bet your bottom dollar, as they like to say, that this coming spring there are going to be thousands of high schools doing plays. That's what they tend to do in the spring, and I think you could probably bet a dollar that the top three are going to be Oklahoma, South Pacific, or My Fair Lady.
That probably is, yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, we have three high schools in our area within 10 miles of us here. And when you look at the newspaper, when you get the newspaper with the invitations for the plays, those are the three that always stand out. And Oklahoma is a huge favorite. You mentioned Oklahoma in World War II, Bill, and I'm just wondering if this is a coincidence, but the Oklahoma was one of the ships that was sunk in Pearl Harbor. And I'm wondering if maybe that connected to the word Oklahoma. I don't know. It struck me as you were saying World War II in Oklahoma. That's what came to my mind, that that was one of the ships that went down.
Yes, actually, that was entirely coincidental. The Oklahoma was based on a play written many years earlier called Green Grow the Lilacs by a playwright named Lynn Riggs. And that's where actually it came from. And by the way, one of the things I'm concerned about, and we've been talking about this on several of the programs, is that there are going to be people, and they may already be out there, who are going to go after Oklahoma as they have gone after other American musicals. There was a school in Massachusetts that once banned West Side Story, one of the great works of the American musical theater, because some members of the Hispanic community were offended by the song America, even though historically the female Hispanic lead has been played by a Hispanic. It was originated by Chita Rivera. It was played in the movies by Rita Moreno. They have always been very sensitive to that. And yet there was a group that, and so the school canceled it. When I was part of a musical theater group when my children were growing up, a child's group, and we put on a Pajama Game, the most innocuous musical ever written. And we got a letter from a feminist group wanting it banned because they said it demonstrated macho behavior on the part of the lead. This was not the way things should be. And we sent them back a polite note saying, in effect, we don't censor things, and they kind of left us alone. But I really fear for the future that once the radical left gets finished with presidents to be torn down and other people to be torn down, that they'll get to culture and they'll want certain works banned. I think it is probably still very difficult in some colleges today to do some of the great American musicals, because they will find something wrong. I mean, I can't imagine doing The King and I, which requires Asian children.
Right, or the one that was recently shown here in Dallas, or the opera that was here in Dallas recently that features black people in the South. I can't think of
Porgy
the story right now, but that's it. That one that was over. I would think that would be a politically correct nightmare for a lot of these people, because of all. So I don't know. I find Oklahoma very enjoyable, and the movie, of course, comes on more often for obvious reasons. And Shirley Jones did a good job in that movie, I thought, and she just turned 84 this week. I knew that she was not in the play, but she was in the movie. Bill, jumping to a couple of other big topics, U.S. Russia. It looks like it's complicated, but maybe it's not so complicated. I don't know. Putin seems to be, making a lot of noise, but I'm not sure how much noise he can make. He really doesn't have that much of an economy or a country, Bill.
Well, he has a military, though.
Yes.
You know, we forget the fact that in World War II, the Russians fought World War II with a third world economy, but they devoted their entire economy to the war effort. And the Red Army was superb. The Red Army took an estimated 80% of the casualties in the war against Nazi Germany. Without them, we would have won, but with many, many more casualties. We have to give credit where it's due. We may not have liked the government, but the Red Army was a superb army. Today, you don't have to have an enormous economy to have a very powerful military if you are equipped with nuclear weapons, which they are. So their military is beginning to come back. They're building very fine planes again. They will, I'm sure, have very good submarines. And he will have a military force that will rival that of a great power, even though he may not have an economy.
Right. Well, the other thing, he may have an intelligence operation in Cuba, Frank. I mean, Bill, they're sending ships to Cuba with frequency, and They've just signed a deal with the Cuban government to basically help them develop some of their ports in Cuba. And, of course, what they're really after is they want that proximity to the United States. So it's like October 62 all over again with Russia and the United States. Very interesting situation.
It is. Putin is a strategist. He's a tough guy. Now, I saw a story float across that the president had invited Putin to the White House or was about to. I don't know if that's true, and I will check it, but that would not surprise me.
Right.
That would not surprise me, but what would have to be done in a case like that is that there would have to be agreements made in advance as to what would come out of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is an area where the president is vulnerable. I don't think he has any soft spot for Putin, but there are people who believe that Putin has something on him, possibly blackmail or a financial transaction. I doubt that that is true, by the way. I mean, as a businessman, he had good legal representation, and I think he would know not to get into a bad situation. However, he has got to demonstrate his toughness on Russia. Inviting him to the White House will be controversial. Isn't it funny? It'll be controversial because the Democrats will object, even though the Democrats laughed at the idea of Russia being a rival only 4 years ago. I mean,
whatever view will
get us something this week. Doesn't matter.
Right.
We don't care about whether it's true or not. We're politicians. Really awful. But if it's true, if he does invite Putin, I think it will be one of the most fascinating summits ever. Because here you have this tough international politician accused of being soft on Russia meeting in the White House with Vladimir Putin. And... the pundits will go crazy. They really will.
Well, what a photograph, Bill. You have
6'4"
Donald Trump, 5'6" Putin, and then you have this lovely first lady, Melania. Who would be his first lady? I don't know if he's even married anymore. I think he was at one time. So that would be quite a photo of the Trumps and the Putins. I think that would be a fun photograph. Bill, let's go to the young people in South Florida and in the school, I mean, and then, of course, the situation with Laura Ingraham, where apparently she said something. I didn't even hear what she said, but she was basically telling this young man, I get to stop whining, that he's not getting into colleges. I didn't find her remarks to be offensive, really. I thought, you could have said it differently. I'll agree with that. But I don't think it was as bad as other things I've heard other people say. But then she apologized to the young man and said, look, if I said something, I apologize, which I thought was very nice of Laura. And now all of a sudden you want to shut her down with these boycotts. I think this is really bad. I think these young people down in South Florida, somebody's got to stand up to them and say, look, just because you went through this doesn't give you the right to say whatever you want to say, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, he has the right to say it, but he is saying as many things that are ridiculous. Look, what happened was she was on the air, and he had whined on – he does a lot of whining, this kid, on television that he wasn't getting into colleges. In fairness to him, it should be stated that these applications were submitted many months ago, and I think some of the rejections came before the Florida incident occurred. I don't think he'll have any trouble getting into some college. But and she made that point on the air, and she said, well, maybe you ought to just worry about getting into college. And it was a little rough for a teenager, but not really out of line. He objected to it, and then she went on the air and said, well, I apologize for what I said. But he wouldn't leave it at that. He started this boycott of a show. I made the point last night to a friend that if this kid were on the other side, he were on the conservative side with his behavior, they would be calling him a little Hitler. You know that's what they would be saying. He is a very obnoxious kid who really doesn't say anything terribly intelligent, but he takes off only at Republicans. I think he called Marco Rubio a baby killer.
Right.
I mean, he obviously it comes from a very left-wing family or background, or maybe he's just left-wing himself. The only people he ever criticizes are Republicans, and he goes about it viciously. And a lot of the people in that group that he's in are particularly vicious. There's a story that was run this morning that I'm going to run on Urgent Agenda in the afternoon, that many people in his school object to what he's doing. They say he doesn't represent us. He's being described as a survivor of the massacre at the Florida school. One teacher said he is not a survivor of the massacre. He was nowhere near it. He said there were real survivors who were wounded or were in the line of fire. He is trying to make a national political career out of this. And frankly, you know, I think at some point he has to be reminded that while we certainly encourage our young people to become involved in politics and involved in issues, they are not national leaders. Now,
right.
One of the things that's involved here, which is, I think, particularly obnoxious, is there is an attempt, and it's a serious attempt, to lower the voting age to 16.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the
yes.
whole purpose behind that is that most young people are liberals, and it will mean millions of more votes for the Democratic Party. I think if we did that, we would be the laughingstock of the world.
Right.
I mean, it's basically to let children vote. But after all,
yeah.
the Democratic Party wants to allow illegal immigrants to vote.
Right. Well, there's another story about one of these young people. There's a young woman. Her last name is Gonzalez. I don't know what her first name is, but I think Emma is her first name. I hope I'm right in saying that. But there's a story in The New Yorker. I haven't read it, but I read a summary of it, almost comparing her to Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
And I think it's absurd. And then in the story, they say that not only is she a revolutionary, but she's now bisexual. So
yes.
I'm sitting there saying 17 years old and she's bisexual. But then a friend from church said, well, you know, that's how you get famous in the media these days. You say you're
that's
bisexual.
It.
Now, all of
yes.
a sudden they give you. But it's like I think these young people need to be told, like you say, you need to be told, OK, you had your 15 minutes of fame. Let's go home and do homework, because that's what they need to be. But this effort to get at Laura Ingraham, Bill. There's a couple of companies, and I don't want to mention their names, but there's a couple of companies in that list that they contact, and one of them I do a lot of business with, and if they drop her, I will not do business with them anymore. And I intend to call them and say, look, I'm going to take what little business I do with you, but I'm not going to do it anymore because you're weak and not standing up to these boycotts. That is wrong to have these boycotts, Bill.
It
really is.
Well, it is wrong, and it is terrible that these corporations are knuckling under so fast.
Yes.
Now, there had been an analysis of this recently, by the way, and it was pointed out that many of the CEOs of these corporations don't live in the great American heartland where we think, you know, we used to have companies actually that came, like Kellogg's and other that came out of Midwestern states, that most of them live in very narrow parts of the country, like Westchester County in New York, where I am right now, where we have loads of CEOs. These are not typical American communities, and they don't really reflect typical American attitudes. And the point was also made that most of them are male, and many of them are influenced by their wives, who tend to be more liberal, but also who want a certain status on the liberal party circuit. And it has a lot to do with that. I call it the Invitation Society. It's a very powerful force here in New York to be invited to the right places. And they start taking these political positions, not understanding that the great majority of Americans don't approve of that. They really don't.
Well, I don't think so. And this lady, the lady who writes in Pittsburgh, I can't think of her name right now. She wrote an article about. That's right. She wrote an article about this when you had the whole incident with the NRA. I think in many cases they don't really understand their customers. But I just think it's about. I think Laura is going to survive. I really do because. Well, she should. I mean, she should survive. I don't think she said anything. I just thought it was very amusing, Bill, that this young man, David Hogg, I guess is his name, H-O-G-G, as soon as he tweets 100 names of sponsors. It's like
yes.
every 17-year-old kid in the country has a list of sponsors in his pocket that he just pulls out whenever it's convenient. I mean, if he was not set up to do that, I don't know what else to say, Bill.
Well, he is being set up. He is being helped by the George Soros people, and
yes.
their job is to their wish is to bring these people down and to take them off the air. And remember, they have had some successes. They got
yes.
O'Reilly off the air. Now, it is true. O'Reilly was subject to an internal investigation. I love these investigations, by the way. We're never told who's doing them, what standards are used. But they got O'Reilly off the air. They have gotten a couple of other victories and destroying broadcasters and journalists. They've gotten people fired from corporations. They have destroyed motion picture people who don't go along. This is really a repeat of what used to be called McCarthyism, except now that it's on the left, they're now heroes. They're national heroes.
Right.
What is interesting is that not one of these national heroes has come out with a viable idea to do anything about gun violence.
That's
right. We're your children. Don't you care about your children? Yes, we do care about our children. We care about them enough to wait for a good idea to come along that will actually have some effect. It's it's interesting, by the way, that not one of these people says the first thing that we need to do is to harden and protect our schools. Protect the children first. That's just common sense.
Yeah, but the parents of some of these kids are saying that. I mean, there's one father who said that, another father who said that. So the parents are of these children are saying it, but they don't get any publicity. The only people who get publicity are the ones who want to attack Senator Rubio or the ones who want to attack the NRA. There was a march this weekend in favor of the Second Amendment, I think, near that school, but you didn't get much publicity about that.
No.
Bill, let me take a little break, and we're going to hear from one of our sponsors, one of our many Blog Talk Radio sponsors, and then we'll come back and we'll continue our conversation with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. One more segment here with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I wanted to talk a little bit in this segment. You have a post about the U.S. economy doing fairly well. Maybe that 50% has something to do with the 50% approval, that is, President Trump, has something to do with the U.S. economy. And also, I wanted to get your thoughts on Director Comey, who has now decided to promote a book. So let's talk about the U.S. economy first. Appears to be some good news in the U.S. economy, Bill.
Well, there seems to be a lot of good news in the economy, and I'm sure this is affecting the president's approval rating. I also think another thing that's affecting it is the fact that a lot of people are getting tired of the Trump bashing. I think it's gone much too far. I think many people feel it's gone much too far, and I think many people feel insulted, especially if they voted for Trump. You saw last week the premiere of the show Roseanne, with Roseanne Barr, who plays a pro-Trump character, and it got incredibly high ratings. I don't know if those ratings will continue, but the fact that they got those ratings, I think, says something about the American people and something that's happening out there, that they're getting tired of this. I think people are saying, don't insult my intelligence. Don't attack every single thing Trump does. I mean, if you think that there are problems, report them, but report the other side as well. And I think that Trump, in a way, is benefiting from that.
I think so. In fact, just on Sunday, I got a phone call from one of the networks, the Spanish networks, and they wanted me to react to what President Trump tweeted about DACA and, you know, how he was threatening Mexico and all of that. And I said, he's not threatening Mexico. He's simply telling Mexico, hey, you know, if you've got people walking through your country headed for the United States, you need to check on that. And then he also brought up DACA. And Bill, what he said about DACA is 100% correct. They don't have the votes right now to pass DACA. And a lot of it is because Democrats don't want to negotiate. So
well, that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
That point was made by the White House this morning, that they actually made some very generous proposals on DACA.
Sure did.
The Democrats just don't want to talk. They want everything. This is what happens when fanatics take over a party.
Right. But, you know, Bill, I said what you just said to them as well, but I also gave them another take. And I said, the reason the Democrats don't want to negotiate DACA is called Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, yes. and West Virginia. Five states, they cannot afford. If they lose two of those five states, and they could end up losing all of them, but let's just assume they lose two or three, they cannot win the Senate. It's as simple as that. The numbers are not there for them. So they have to hold on to those five. They're not going to hold on to those five, forcing Joe Manchin in West Virginia to defend DACA without border enforcement, that is. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well. Now, what do you think of the director, former director Comey, going on a book tour? Look, book tours are great, but I'm not sure his timing is the best, Bill.
It's not the best, and I think the tour is completely inappropriate. I really do. I mean, this is just not something that one does. He is the former director of the FBI. He is supposed to be above reproach. He's been involved in controversy, but the investigations into both his behavior and others, those investigations are underway. They haven't been completed. There have been no conclusions. It would have been nice had he written his book or sold his book after the investigations, when it would have been more appropriate. If he were charged with something, he could then reply. But in the middle of an investigation, to go on a book tour by a man who was in a position of such sensitivity seems completely inappropriate.
Well, imagine what his lawyer, because I mean, I do believe, with all due respect to the director, former director Comey, I do believe he could find himself, there's a very good chance he could find himself in legal trouble. Yes. And can you imagine his attorney saying, okay, Jim, you can go on this tour, but you cannot answer any questions. So, you know, it's going to be one of those things where the host will say, well, Director Comey, did you know that, and he's going to say, well, I cannot answer. My counsel doesn't want me to answer that right now. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a very interesting interview, Bill, because he's not going to be able to answer any of the questions that people want to hear.
That's right. And these things will all be arranged in advance. He's going on shows that he knows will be very friendly to him. I mean, Colbert, I can just see the introduction. I mean, having worked on a talk show, I worked on The Tonight Show, I can just see Colbert introducing, my next guest is one of the finest Americans, a man respected by all. Ladies and gentlemen, the former director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Mr. James B. Comey. And you will see the camera. I'm predicting this. You will see the camera immediately switch to the audience, which will rise in a standing ovation to Mr. James B. Comey, most of whom the members of that audience probably never heard of. But they will rise. There will be a standing ovation, maybe some bowing. There may be some salutes. But that is what you're going to see. And what is interesting, and again, here the hypocrisy of the left flows like lava from Mount Vesuvius. These are the same people who have spent most of their lives bashing the FBI. You know,
right.
fascists, thugs, G-men with guns. I mean, the left is congenitally against the FBI. And, you know, tear down the Hoover Building. But all of a sudden, they have become the FBI's best friend because the FBI is seen as anti-Trump. So therefore,
right.
they must have found religion, or in the case of the left, atheism. You know,
that's right. Well, Bill, I think the other thing, too, Colbert will say exactly what you just said, and then he will say, who was fired by President Trump because he wanted to obstruct justice. I'm sure
that's
that'll
right.
be part of the
But I just want to see. I want to see all those adolescents in the audience standing up and applauding a guy they've never heard of. You know, yeah, man,
no,
yeah, head of the FBI.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. No, you're right. But I think the book, though, is because he's going to appear on a lot of shows, like you say, friendly audiences. But I'm not sure that's how you sell books, because if you want to sell books, you got to go to the places with audiences. And, I mean, I don't know how many people are going to watch him or how many more sales he's going to make at MSNBC by going there. I mean, everybody who hates Trump is probably going to buy this book and be very disappointed, Bill.
Well, of course, yes. I mean, look, it's going to be a bestseller. They'll arrange for it to be a bestseller. You can see the ads for the book. At last, no, that's the word they use in publishing, the term, at last, the truth from the man who knows it best.
That's right.
I mean, you can predict this entire thing, and that's the way
that's
it's
right.
going to be done.
That's right.
I mean, I remember the books by Hillary Clinton. I mean, there were, you know, the Queen speaks, you know.
That's right. That's exactly right. Bill, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you for anything in particular that you're looking, you're following this week. There seems to be a lot of stuff, a lot of balls up in the air. Anything in particular you'll be keeping an eye on?
Well, there are a lot of balls up in the air. And by the way, I just checked the story about the president inviting Putin. Apparently, a Russian news service reported that he invited Putin during his congratulatory call. Congratulating Putin on the phony election. That is what is being reported. I don't think there's been a reply from the White House. There are so many things going on. Reminding people there's going to be a midterm election this year.
That's right.
And it will be
That's
critical.
Right.
It will be critical. I think you'll see some examination of the development of politics. I think you're going to see also an increase in attention to the fact that the president predicted that he would be seeing the North Korean leader by May. Well, May is right around the corner. I think you're going to see increasing attention to that story. I think the Arab-Israeli conflict is erupting again on the Israeli border, and we're seeing the usual Israel bashing for trying to defend themselves. But I think you're going to see more about that. And I also think you're going to see a lot of speculation, which will be absolutely uninformed speculation, about who is next to be fired by the president. These people seem to think that if you get a cabinet post, it's a lifetime position. You can just sit there. You know, even when the next president comes, you're still sitting there, not realizing that cabinet offices have been forced out, over the years. They serve at the pleasure of the president. And I think what Trump is doing is actually quite good. He's looking at the people who are performing. They're staying. The people who are not performing, they're going. And I have no problem with that at all.
No, not at all. I mean, not at all. And he's, he has every right to do that as the executive. That's his job. You know, he has a responsibility to surround himself with the people who he works with. And, you know, after a year or so, some people are gone. I don't have a beef with any of the changes, though. I mean, that's the interesting part. I mean, it's not like I'm angry that he fired somebody. The Secretary of State, I thought that was a good change. The CIA is going to be, that's going to be a good change. So I don't know. I feel like he's making a lot of changes, but I don't disagree with the changes that he's making, Bill. And on that note, we're going to have to let it go, but I'm looking forward to the next time. As always, I'm sure that all these balls in the air will give us a lot to talk about, Bill.
Oh, we will have plenty to talk about into the indefinite future.
That's right. Have a wonderful day, Bill. And again, thank you for your time, and thank you for the great work you do at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to our next show.
Our next show. Bye-bye. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Always enjoy chatting with Bill and just having a good time and talking about many of the balls up in the air. There's a ton of balls up in the air. This is really an amazing presidency. When, if you just look at it as a front page story, one after the other, it's just absolutely unbelievable. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you the next time.